You're listening to the Youth Crit Podcast on KHZ Network. Find us on Facebook at DecibelUNG Radio and find us on Twitter at DecibelUNG. If you like this episode, please leave a like and comment on our iTunes page at KHZ Network. And now for the podcast.
Welcome to the Youth Critic Podcast. I am your host, Kel Smith. Joining me today is...
I'm Chase Yarbrough.
And Ethel Nunez.
And today we are going to be talking about Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Men Tell No Tales. Now, later on in the show, we are going to go into Baywatch as a spoiler review with Andy Comer, but that'll be at the second half of the show. But first, Chase and Ethel and I are going to be talking about Pirates of the Caribbean... Five, and we're going to be talking about the franchise as a whole and then what we want from the future. So, Ethel, starting with you, what do you think of the Pirates of the Caribbean franchise?
I think the first three characters, Elizabeth Swann, Will Turner, and Jack Sparrow, they're pretty entertaining to watch every time they go through their little mishaps and such. I've only seen the first three, mind you, so I'm very sorry. I hear it doesn't get better than that after, so that's why I kind of gave up on the franchise. And coming into this one, watching it, you know, to see them come back was kind of nice, but I really didn't see a point in it.
You're fine. Go. Keep on.
Sorry. And so, I don't know. I don't know what's going to be holding for them all in the future, but honestly, I was not excited to see this movie.
No.
Chase?
I mean, I'm kind of the same flavor as Ethel. I have seen all of them, and I think it's probably a good decision not to watch that fourth one. It's garbage. But this one was actually, I thought, was better than the fourth one. It definitely had its mishaps, because it definitely felt like the soft reboot that it was meant to be, where they were just kind of introducing these new characters and introducing a lot of stuff all in like one movie, and it felt like there was something new going on like every couple minutes almost, which was nice and confusing at the same time. And yeah, I kind of agree with her that the whole Will Turner and all of them coming in just didn't really feel like it had a place in the movie, really. They really missed out on a great opportunity, I thought, with the Will Turner character to have this great ghost ship battle at the end. I thought that would have been fantastic, and I would have been so happy if that happened, but it didn't. And that kind of let me down. But
that would have been cool. That would have been really cool. And going to the Will Turner thing, Orlando Bloom's only in it for like 10, not even 10 minutes,
right.
Or maybe even just 5. Because, Keira Knightley doesn't even have a line of dialogue.
Yeah, she just comes in and she's like, give me a hug.
And a kiss.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the thing. And again, the fourth one, it tried to have its own Will and Elizabeth and have a new adventure to follow. And this one, and this is likewise have characters that are like Will and Elizabeth.
Mm-hmm.
Try to make, you know, Jack Sparrow the goofy guy that's smarter than ever. That's smarter but not always competent than everyone. And then, so it's just like the formula is here, but It's nowhere near as good as the original three.
Yeah, like, I agree.
Like, I feel like Gore Verbinski, the director of the first three movies, I felt like he had a much more stronger grasp on what this franchise was and how to reinvent, you know, the pirate saga. Because if any of you guys remember, and of course we were kids when the first Pirates came out, the pirate genre really wasn't huge. Like, I think the last, like, big pirate movie was Cutthroat Island with Gina Davis, and that bombed horribly. So we're now in this cutting to Pirates, we're now in, you know, this age where really we still haven't seen much more of that. We still haven't seen much more adventure-like movies. So while I feel like the Pirates of the Caribbean were hits, I don't know what it has made an impact on. I don't know how its impact was made on the, like, Hollywood, like, movies going circuit. Like, because I don't see any more, like, movies like Pirates a lot of time.
There is Black Flags now, though. The TV show.
I think it's Black Sails.
Black Sails. Yeah. Why did I say Black Flags? Black Sails.
I love that show.
Oh, yeah. Sure, but that's television.
Yeah. But I mean, I don't know. I feel like there's a common, I guess, shift in the winds to go towards television anyway. But.
Oh, of course. Sure. So going into my thoughts on the fifth one, I was not really. It's better. You're right. It's better, Chase. It's better than the fourth one, but still, it's not as great as the other three. And mostly, I think that's because, and I don't know if you guys will agree, but it's because of the new, like, Will. I'm doing this in quotes. Will and Turner, that is in Henry and Karina, and that's mostly because their chemistry doesn't always work. And also, I don't find Brent Thwaites a charismatic, charming person, you know. I mean, Orlando Bloom, like, he oozes the charisma and can play that character that he did in Will Turner, but Brent Thwaites, all he's good for is just to be a block of wood with eyes and then just smile.
Damn.
Yeah, at least he had that sense of adventure, but there's just, sure, I don't see any sex appeal out of him. Sorry.
Sure, but really, I'm just thinking when I look at him, I'm like, he's just good at smiling.
Yeah.
He's got the smile. That's it. He has a great smile.
He kind of looks like Orlando Bloom. I think that's why they hired him. Let's just say that.
I don't even think that's accurate.
Oh, no.
But yeah, so. I have to kind of. So, what were there any positives in this new movie? I know you said it was better than the fourth one. So, what about you?
I mean, I liked all the new characters. I know you said that you didn't like them. I liked them just because it gave a little bit more to it than I guess that fourth one did. Because I know you said that it was just like the Will and Elizabeth saga for a second.
I will say this, they did. Karina is a good character.
Yeah, she's almost like the Hermione of pirates.
She is. She's a smart person.
Yeah.
She even gets called a witch in this movie.
Exactly, see?
Yeah.
But, I also don't understand, speaking of witches, I don't understand why that other witch was even in the movie either. She just kind of came in as like a sagey character that was like telling the future.
She's this movie's Apocalypse. You know, she's that character where, you know, she's the witch doctor that can summon spirits or be spiritual.
It just felt like it wasn't needed.
Yeah. I mean, they had to figure out how to get the compass there, so.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's stick to the compass. The whole plot device is that whole compass getting lost.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't make any sense because I think we're going to go into spoilers. I'm going to go into spoilers because I can't do it anymore. I can't not talk about this. But the whole, like, how the compass, like, unleashes Captain Salazar, played by Javier Bardem, it doesn't make any sense. Especially when we go back in the flashback.
Yeah, I didn't really get what was going on there either. I pretty much just kind of filled in the gaps before then, which is not always a good thing. I just kind of said, well, okay, so this is a magical item, and we knew from all the other movies it's a magical item. And I guess that's just the source of its curse for some reason, was just that it bound people in that location. It's kind of what I thought. Like you said, they never really explained it. They were just kind of like, oh, all right, this compass is now not in the hands of the guy that bound them in this location, so now you're not bound anymore.
The compass is another word, guys, for trident, by the way.
Wait, no?
It is?
No, it was the compass. It wasn't the trident.
Oh, okay. Well, trident broke anyway, so can we talk about that? That was totally pointless, Barbosa has to go and die for no damn reason.
I disagree with that part.
That's complete. I mean, it's pointless. It's a screenwriter's way of, making, something huge, making the climax, mm-hmm. Mean something. But, what were you going to say? Because we're kind of jumping all over the place.
Well, with the compass thing, like you said, I mean, I don't really think that it made sense, but I just kind of went with it. But the trident thing that you're talking about, I thought that it made more sense with the trident than it did with the compass, because I guess the trident held all of these like magical things in the sea and all the like different like curses. So whenever you break that, you break all the curses. But in my mind, I feel like if you break that trident, then the compass shouldn't work either. But it did still work after. So I mean, that the compass is really like, I agree, it's the main source of like the what the hell's going on.
Yeah, and even when we go to the flashback, it doesn't make any sense, because Sparrow just gets the compass from some guy that's dying, and that's it.
You go, son.
Yeah. And going to your trident problem, that is the MacGuffin of this movie, and apparently the MacGuffin is we need to break it in order to unleash the curse of everyone. But really, the whole like climax of the water coming down like, fucking Moses or something, or the parting of the Red Sea, mm-hmm. it's silly because they're not in that deep of water. They could possibly have swam up. And what kills you in water, if you're like, and the water wasn't moving fast enough to create a tension to where it would like smash people. Harm them anyway. So I felt like that was kind of anticlimactic. Because it's a cool action scene, or it looked visually cool. Yeah. It's a visually cool scene, but it's like it doesn't really work in the movie.
Right.
So we kind of been doing negatives. But Ethel, did you have any positives?
I do. I was very excited because there was a cameo by Keith Richards back in the day, right?
As Paul McCartney.
No, wait. Keith Richards as Jack's father.
We
have Paul McCartney as Uncle Jack, and it was just kind of cool because I didn't even recognize him, so it was pretty awesome to see in the credits.
Yeah, that was nice. I knew about the cameo that could happen, that was going to happen, because it was reported that he was in the movie. but I didn't.
You knew he was going to be related to Sparrow somehow.
Yeah, because almost all rock stars are. And even the character Jack Sparrow is like, Johnny Depp based it off of like real rock stars.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he was a rock star too, back in the day. So
right. So, what else can we say? I'm sorry, guys. I've already talked about this a lot with people, so I don't know what else to say. Other than it was good but not great.
Will you watch, if there are reboots in the future, will you watch them?
Sure. But that doesn't mean I will be 100% there. To 100% excited for it. Mm-hmm. Because here's the thing. Like, I know either way, I'm going to see these movies no matter what. But the thing is, I'm going to be there to review it and be there to see it as a moviegoer. But let me ask this question to all of you. Do you want to continue watching this franchise, especially now, having been marketed that this was the final adventure? Because it's in the trailer. Like, it's been in the trailer as the final adventure. But in this But, you know, as we saw in the post-credit scene, there's clearly more material to work with. So do you guys want to see more of these?
I think it's going to feel really weird without Jack Sparrow. Like, because, I mean, with this being Johnny Depp's last film with Pirates, I think it's going to be weird. But, I mean, I say that, but at the same time, like, I feel like his character was another one of those characters that in this movie, it didn't really have a place. He was just kind of there. Like, he was there to, like, bumble around, and I know I was talking to a friend earlier about it, and they pretty much made the good point of he almost made it harder for them to achieve their goal. He just kind of, like, held everybody back more than anything.
Yeah, I mean, well, he's not even, he's not even that competent anymore. Like, he's not even...
It was like his rock bottom.
Yeah, he's at his rock bottom. So, and no one really likes to follow a character. I mean, I guess if you're making a drama, maybe. But no one, but this is a Disney movie, so that deals with alcoholism in a really not so enlightened way. It's not that, not like Johnny Depp is not, or not Johnny Depp, Jack Sparrow is not a character worth following anymore.
I don't think. It lost its luster in this film for sure. I just felt like I said, I don't feel like he was really needed in this one, to be honest.
Yeah.
You could have just like, he could have made the same amount of screen appearances as like Will Turner did or Elizabeth Swann did, where he came in, he stole the bank or the big safe, and then
the
gave
fast
away the
five
that was ridiculous. And then lost the compass, and then he's gone. I mean, that's literally like that's all you needed him for.
Yeah, that's really it. Like look, Johnny Depp is trying to give a performance. Like, I don't think he slept walk through any of five of these movies, but there's just nothing there.
For this one, at least, yeah.
And I don't think, you know, and regarding the other characters, I feel like Barbossa had a little bit more to work with because his character has, it's a twist now that Karina is his daughter. He was, you know, Barbossa's, you know, doing everything he can with the material, even though the material's not really there as well. But it's just, you know, but that's really the thing is there's cool ideas. Like, Captain Salazar's whole look and movement is...
Like, I really liked the ghost sharks.
Yeah,
that was
the ghost
cool.
sharks.
Or zombie sharks, I guess. I don't know.
Well, the ghost sharks, well, that's what they are called. And I think that's what they're called in the movie, or referred to. The ghost sharks and this whole Salazar crew and how it's all done, it's a neat...
It is neat.
A neat effects.
Yeah.
But again, it's, you know, Captain Salazar is not really that particularly interesting of a character. He was just someone that got... Another person that got screwed by Johnny Depp. Or, I mean, sorry, Jack Sparrow. He gets screwed by Jack Sparrow, and so now Jack wants him, so...
Or Salazar wants Jack,
Salazar wants Jack, yeah. So...
But I really feel like... I know I said this earlier about the ghost ship thing, but I feel like if they would have ended it with a ghost ship battle, I would have felt a little bit more fulfilled. I don't know. Maybe it's just my own, like, personal biases of wanting to see that, but, like, the way that they soft-opened Will Turner's appearance with the Henry guy dropping down onto his ship, and he's like, mm-hmm. You can't be here. Like, I am only at the sea. This is a bad idea. And then the way that they were in that, like, parting of the Red Sea scene, and he was stuck there with Captain Salazar and everybody. Right. I feel like it would have been, like, a fantastic way to end it where, like, in order for them to escape, Daddy comes in on, like, the Flying Dutchman, and his whole crew battles Salazar's whole crew. And I think that would have made more sense, especially when they broke the curse. It would have made more sense because then Dad also, you see him transferring away from his whole, like, barnacle stuff and Salazar. And then, like, it made sense for at the end whenever he came onto shore and hugged Elizabeth because that, like, it came out of literally nowhere. He just kind of came, he was for somehow, some way, on a random island and met Elizabeth. I just think that, like,
well, it's implied that it was missing the same island that he left her on.
I get it, but it's like it was missing that. I feel like it would have been stronger if it was something like that.
Yeah, I agree.
Maybe it's my personal bias, but
yeah, and I agree because we don't get the sense of any lost love.
Yeah.
I mean, we know how Pirates 3 ended with, you know, Will and Elizabeth, but we don't feel like that reunion because we've, in these last two movies, we've only spent 30 seconds.
Yeah. If it was all about, like, reuniting a family and family ties, then you need some bigger connection to the family ties than just saying, oh, yeah, hey, I set my dad free, so now he can go and hug mom. Yeah. Like, I think that it needed something where he came and, like, helped the son in some way. Like, it just, it needed that. And, I mean, it didn't happen. It really, that to me, like, I could look over, like, a lot of the other things, but that just, like, really, it annoyed me. I don't know.
Yeah. So, do we have any more thoughts on Pirates before we segue into Baywatch with Andy? Or do you have any more final thoughts? Yes or no?
No.
Since they're already doing so much, this Disney company, we might as well try to get a new kind of Jack Sparrow looking dude. I mean, you might as well do it. You might as well do it.
Why? You, see, because at that point, they're copying literally every character from the old series.
I think they should just go through with what they already started. That's all I got to say.
You mean just commit?
Yeah,
just commit to their bullshit?
Exactly.
Commit to the remasking.
Yeah. Just, why don't they just remake these movies? Just reboot it.
That's the way it felt, though. It's a soft reboot where they had...
The last two movies were soft reboots, essentially.
What?
This one and the other one were like soft reboots, because I mean, we're basically we're now giving Jack some new character. I mean, look, Jack and Barbossa and a couple of the other characters are like the main people that we've been following all five movies, but all these other ones, like, yeah, you're right, they're, or you know, including this fifth one, they do feel like soft reboots or Lego sequels, as the term is now coined. As I do air quotes. So you say let's just redo everything?
Yeah, do it.
I don't know.
Maybe not make him drunk.
maybe
give him some
same,
ambition. Yeah.
Maybe make him the same character he was in the first movie.
Mm-hmm. I mean, for all we know, Jack Sparrow could have 40 children, and you know, one of them happens to be the main focus in the next.
A little sparrow.
Little sparrow.
Actually, at the end of the fourth one, it's hinted that he did have a child.
Oh boy,
Penelope Cruz.
Oh my goodness.
Do you remember that?
I don't remember that part. To be honest, I've tried to like block the fourth one out of my head a lot.
It's hard to block out movies, including bad ones. Yeah. So. There, that could be a thing. Huh. We could see who's the hot musician now. We could see Justin Bieber play.
Oh my, no.
One of the One Directional kids. That who's that one that's now
you gotta go like rock. You gotta go like rock stuff. Like
well, what's
some
the
sort
hot
of
hot rock stuff.
Oh my goodness, what's the name of his name is Brandon.
From
what
band?
Angelic voice. I'm so sorry, guys, that I've never heard a song from
What?
Panic at the Disco. There we go.
Oh, yeah, is that a person or a band?
That's a band. He's not that young now, but I mean, he has a great singing voice, and he seems like he has that sex appeal too. So
let's do.
All
why.
I know is that he's
you're talking about Brandon Ure.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that would. I actually think
he could
probably
totally
do
kick
it.
Ass.
Actually, I
put
think
some eyeliner on. Ooh.
I think he could probably play like a rebooted Jack Sparrow-esque character. I still don't like condone it.
Right.
I think that.
Yeah, I don't know if I can condone this either. Yeah. I think I'd rather see this franchise just die. Let's go on the ride.
Yeah.
Let's go on because I hear the ride has more to do with the movies now than it did, you know, a few years back. So.
So sexy people time.
What?
Baywatch, sexy people time, trying to segue into the next one.
Oh yeah. So, do you guys have any like Twitter or Instagram handles that people do you guys want people to follow you on? It's okay if you don't.
No, not really.
No, I'm okay.
All right. Okay.
I'll be the silent observer.
All right. So now we're going to segue into Andy and Ethel. Chase, thank you all for coming in. I know this was not as an exciting part of this podcast because I've been talking about it so much. thank you. Thank you guys for coming in so much. And we will see you all soon.
Yeah,
all
thanks right, for having
you.
Us.
Thank you so much.
We love you, Kale.
Thanks.
Our team is the elite of the elite. We're the heart and soul of this very beach. We protect when other people don't want to protect. And we go above and beyond.
Help me! If you want me, you can have me.
Some other time.
We're staring into the abyss here. City Council's already cut our funding. It's up to us to restore the Baywatch brand.
I'm Matt Brody.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Youth Critic Podcast. Joining me right now is Andy Comer.
Howdy, howdy.
And now we're discussing Baywatch. So, Andy, what did you think of Baywatch?
It is a crap movie, but you should go see it anyway because there's a lot of eye candy and my future wife is in it.
Now, who's your future wife again?
Kelly Rohrbach, the girl that play the blonde that plays C.J. Parker, the Pam Anderson role. She is awesome.
Okay, all right. I agree as well, except I don't have my future wife in there. It's just a bad movie. So it's just a bad, unlaughable movie with. I think the worst approach they could have went with for a Baywatch movie. Now, Andy, I don't know if you have seen the show or not, but I have not seen an episode of Baywatch ever.
It's been years and years.
And but the general consensus is for the show is that it was mostly just pornography before the internet.
Like kind of, but not really. They tried to dramatize stuff, but like it, I could see why people think that if they didn't watch the show. It kind of is though in the same respect because it's just a bunch of, you know, sexy looking people running around on the beach. So I can understand that. But this movie, basically, they knew what they kind of knew what they had with like the brand and like, you know, it's just they wanted attractive people, entertaining people in these roles, saving lives and doing going on a little police chase, I guess, for some drugs. And I guess they kind of did what they wanted, but like they focused too heavily on the dick jokes and kind of stuff like that rather than like a cohesive story that you could actually like believe that this is a beach that would actually exist. And that just didn't work for me. The story is absolute garbage. Most of the, like, I'd say the only characters that actually get any development are The Rock, Zac Efron, and maybe the bigger guy.
John Bass's character?
Yeah. Well, and that's only because like he gets attention only because he's like obsessed with the C.J. Parker character. And you get to know a little bit about him, but not much. But it's mostly just The Rock and Zac Efron and a little bit of him. Everything else is just, you know, them trying to be, you don't get any deeper than them, like, just like wanting to save lives and Zac Efron's character saying or wanting to save lives and then protect the beach, quote unquote, from criminals. But then you just have Zac Efron's like, no, we save people from like drowning and like getting suntans. That's it. Blah, blah, blah. And they're like, no, like it's way more than that. And it, I don't know. They just did not do a good enough job in my eyes to make the movie worthwhile, especially at $69 million. Yeah, I don't understand where all that money went.
I don't either. And I was genuinely surprised to see that because there's a whole scene in the movie where they have to like save people from a, you know, a fiery boat, like a boat that's on fire. And it looks terrible. The whole scene looks completely awful. The CGI looks terrible. The Rock doesn't even interact with anything like that would remotely be there to like harm him. Like he doesn't act. He's nothing. He's not acting to anything. So it makes it even worse that the fire isn't even there on set when they were filming it. And it's a terror. And, you know, it's a just colossal failure of a scene because nothing looked great. Everyone's far away from each other, so you can't really tell, you know, where anyone's at. And even at times it feels like, oh my gosh, they filmed a lot of these sections of the scenes on different days rather than just one cohesive day.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that like happens, and the editing of the scenes that put it together are really random. Like there's a sequence I remember that stood out to me a lot, where they're setting up to do the tryouts for Baywatch. And first off, they shoehorn this in like crazy. Like, yeah, usually we only have one opening, blah blah blah, and then like, but this year we have three. Interesting, because we know exactly which three. Like, that just bugged me a lot, because obviously Zach is getting the one because he's getting pushed on the team, and then the other two is because they just wanted those other two guys on, or the other girl and the other guy on there. And it's just it was just so lazy to me. But anyway, so then they're setting up for that, and then The Rock is doing like stuff with he was doing stuff like talking to Zac Efron's character, and then all of a sudden he's talking to like the police officer, and then trying to get the bigger guy's dick out of the wood. And then all of a sudden he's like back in town at the police station talking to like the guy that he's trying to get Zac Efron off the team. It's just like the cuts were just like crazy. I'm like, what the hell? Like, it was just really jarring to me that they just went all over, and it just didn't really make any logical sense.
Well, the training sequence, going back to that for a second, it's actually encompassing of what this whole movie is, where there is like a competition, where there's supposed to be stakes. Like from a screenwriting stance, there's stakes that, you know, we want these characters to stay, you know, we want these characters that we've been following to go through, and there should be some sort of mystery. But the thing is, because the writing is so lazy and because we've already focused on these characters too much, we know that they're going to get in, like, regardless. We know what's going to happen. So why is it so? And the reason why it's encompassing of everything that we're watching is because there's no mystery to this movie. We know who the villain is. And everyone knows who the villain is, even though there's no logical reason why they think the villain in the movie is the villain of the movie. And so there really is no mystery. So it's kind of boring. You're just watching these characters trying to figure out a way, you know, to connect the dots, when really you're just waiting for the characters to connect the dots.
Yeah. And like, I connected them obviously right away, like right when we're talking spoilers, right?
Yes.
Okay. So basically, like, the guy that is bringing Zac Efron to Baywatch is trying to have him take over Baywatch because The Rock is putting his nose into things too much, and this guy has been paid by the main bad guy to let everything go on the beach. And he basically it's so obvious to me, like in the first scene, the way he's like talking about how badly he needs this on there, it's not publicity. It's so obvious that it's basically because he doesn't like The Rock prying into what he's doing. And it just bugged me. I'm like, come on, really? Come on, open your eyes. Like, this is so obvious to me.
And you know, from a realist, and I know this is not supposed to be a realistic movie in any sense, but the cop is right. Like, he's right that, you know, these are lifeguards. They shouldn't, like, get involved.
Well, I'm talking about the cop that's above The Rock, not the cop that he always messes with.
Oh, I know. Sure. I understand that. But, okay. Like, you know, I'm just going to, like
yeah, I gotcha.
The premise is so, like, ridiculous. And it's even, like, mentioned hundreds of times that they're lifeguards. They shouldn't be doing this. Even Zac Efron's character is like, no, we should just save people from you know, sunburns and like we should just be patrolling the beach. Like, if anything, we should tell the we should be just working with the cops. But the cops in this movie have nothing to do with these people, even though it's obvious. It's super.
They don't take anything obvious. That like even if the lifeguards on Baywatch wanted to work with the cops wouldn't, because they don't see them as actual, like, they don't see them on their level. So like that one cop didn't believe anything that they were saying. So they had to keep going.
Yeah, I mean, I get that. It's just, it's so obvious that, yeah. You know, like it's so obvious that normal, like, police, or I hope, maybe I'm just being very hopeful about this, but hopefully there's like enough, like, you know, eye opening, like, you know, situations where it's like, you know, maybe we should just look into it, you know, just for shits and giggles. But no one, everyone's just like, it's just such bullshit. These lifeguards are just inconveniencing us. They're just, it's terrible. Like this. So not only is there nothing realistic or logical happening, because logical and realistic, they're not the same thing. Like even in non-realistic situations, there has to be some sort of logic. And so there's no logic to this movie or the plot device. And we're stuck with, you know, characters who are trying to just connect the dots that we've already connected in our minds, because the movie is telling us everything in advance.
Yep.
And this is, you know, two hours of dick jokes and I don't mean to, like, you know, say this was a requirement, but if you were wanting to go into a Baywatch movie looking for boobs, there's no boobs in this movie.
Yeah, that's one thing that surprised me. Like you said, it's not like you would think that's required since it's rated R. If they would have made this PG-13, obviously you wouldn't expect that. But the fact that, one, there's dick in this movie, you would expect that you'd get boobs too.
Yeah, I mean,
it's just an expectation since it's rated R and they're throwing the F word around. And like that, they have dick. Like that's the only reason. Like I'm perfectly fine with them not. Like the cleavage is more than good enough for me. But like it's just a little surprise. I'm like, huh, they didn't do that. Whatever.
And yeah, I mean, I'm okay with it too. But I feel like, you know, this is an audience that you're promoting yourself as an R-rated movie, R-rated Baywatch, and of course, Baywatch is very well known for Pamela Anderson. And so you're thinking, okay, we're going to see, you know, maybe Alexandria Daddario or your future wife, like, or the other chick, I can't remember her name. We're going to see some boobs.
I didn't expect any of the main three. I expected like people on the beach, stuff like that.
Oh, sure. But even then you're just like, there's just nothing. You see more of John Bass than you see of anyone in this movie.
Well, that's another thing. Like, it's really inconsistent to the characters. There's a good 20-minute stretch where it's literally just The Rock and Zac Efron, and then like they throw in either the highest ranking female on Baywatch and Daddario. Like, you don't even see Bass or Rohrbach's characters for at least 20 minutes. And that was like the slowest part for me, because I just wanted to see Kelly Rohrbach and this guy, because to me, that was the best part of the movie, was their banter back and forth. Because, you know, in our heads, the way that like society has is like, there's, and the reason why the kid is so nervous around her is because in society's mind, they should not end up together. And honestly, I heard about this later in the script. Originally, they didn't. Apparently, throughout the script, when they first read it, she was very cold to him and just like a complete bitch to him, ignoring him and all this stuff. But she's like, no, like, he's the funniest, like the Kelly Rohrbach, the actress. It's like, no, like if this was me and I was like, and this guy kept doing these things, I would think that he's hilarious and I would probably end up falling for him. And like the way that they did it, I thought that was like one of the strongest things in the movie. And that might be my bias, because like I found her just awesome in every way. But I just feel like that was the best part of the movie.
I actually agree with you. And not only, and I'll also add that really the whole cast has good chemistry with each other.
Yeah.
Like they, like you feel that they're a team. It's, you feel that they're a team of people that are, you know, working together and they, you know, want to get along.
They get there with Zach, but everybody else gets along. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, of course, I mean, with Zach's character, it's, you know, it's a, you know, he has to kind of get there too with them. But you feel like, especially towards the end, like there is chemistry between everyone and everyone's working together and there's a plan and you believe it in the movie, but
they're obviously slow because they can't figure this stuff out that we've already figured out.
Yeah. Well, it would be too, it would be like too much for the screenplay to handle. Is to, it's like, that's the thing with this movie. It's like it revealed everything to us, but then the script, you know, doesn't want them to, and the script just goes out of its way to basically delay the progress of this team just so we can have, you know, non subplots that just will delay the movie even further.
Well, that's what happens when you're extending a TV show, which is used to having like these beats, you know, in a half hour to an hour and a half long. Like they have to add other things to drag it out.
Well, it's a 2-hour movie.
Yeah. They have to drag it out an hour and a half.
Yeah. And so with all this said, I mean, what was the point of all of this?
To try to capitalize on the Baywatch brand and to capitalize on The Rock and Zac Efron's chiseled bodies and then get some cleavage in there for the, so that the guys go see it too.
Yeah, even though there's...
That is literally the entire point of the movie. And then throw some dick jokes around. Because the dick, or the dick, The Rock does deliver, you know, like, cocky and like crude jokes exceptionally well. He is like one of the most entertaining people on the planet, and that's evident here, but like when he's given such a shitty script, like it's not gonna help.
Yeah, well, he oozes charisma. Like he, yeah. you want to be by his side. Like you want to follow this person. That's why even when he's, you know, working at what, Sprint,
yeah,
he's like the most interesting, he's still like a compelling character, still compelling because it's The Rock. Like, yeah, even though the situation's technically funny, it's still like this, you know, it's still The Rock, you know, at its down level. And you as the audience wants to see The Rock get back up. Like he has charisma. You're rooting for him. And again, it's just the problem of, you know, of a terrible script and a, and can I ask, what did you think about the direction of this movie? I know we kind of talked a little bit about the boat scene and, you know, several other things, but what did you think about the execution of it?
I don't know. It was pretty bland to me. Like, it just got the beautiful people in focus, and then that was about it. I didn't find anything else, like, too exceptional. I didn't find really anything exceptional about this movie.
Yeah, so let's, before we go, I want to talk about the box office and the RT score drama that's, you know, come out of this week. So the box office is now, it made about $23 million over the weekend, over the 4-day weekend. And so far it is currently, Box Office Mojo hasn't updated its box office since yesterday. But currently it's at $30 million on a $69 million budget, and less than a million has come out of the foreign box office. So I don't think we're getting a Baywatch 2, even though I think the movie will do okay.
How much it's been released? Oh, it's only been released in New Zealand.
Right now it's just New Zealand.
Okay, so yeah, I don't know where else it's been released, but, you know, The Rock has, and Zac Efron has presence, like, around the world. So, like, that's going to go up a bit, but I'd be shocked if this movie ends up over $69 million, which obviously still isn't making money because of all the marketing and stuff like that. But
I don't see how this movie gets a sequel unless it's like direct to DVD and has none of this cast.
Yeah, it's unfortunate because, I mean, this cat, because here's the thing I will give Seth Gordon, the director, credit for, is that he does have a really good cast in his, you know, at his, you know, disposal. It just doesn't real. It's just he's. It's just the material and his direction just doesn't really. It's not unique at all or interesting. So, so now with, you know, this whole box office, you know, because I think I consider Baywatch right now to be a flop. I mean, it could do very well. It could make like a 200 million worldwide. But I don't see it as a success. So, and neither does Paramount. And that's why this week there's Hollywood insiders that are kind of, you know, really angry at critics and the, you know, Rotten Tomatoes for like the low scores and stuff.
I really hate that people blame Rotten Tomatoes. It's not their fault. They're just a place where the reviews go to be aggregated, not the place that actually reviews them. And a lot of people do not realize that for some reason. Like there's, I don't know how, oh my God, this has been a thing that I've really gotten into since, even before Batman versus Superman. It's just so frustrating. It's a Rotten Tomatoes is a place where they pick critics, film critics that, you know, like review lots and lots of films and are considered to be like top film critics. They put them all in a pile, and if it's positive, then it becomes, if it's over six, if it's rated over 60%, then it's fresh. If it's less than 60, then it's rotten. And then they just average it. It's a place to put all the reviews on one site so you can scroll through, find ones that like find the reviewers that you follow, that like your views line up with, and then you read their review so you can make your decision from that. The percentage honestly doesn't mean anything. Because it could have 100 reviews, have 99 of them be 60%, which isn't great. And then one that's less than 60%, and then that Rotten Tomatoes score is 99%.
Yeah, I mean, you're right.
But like, people do not understand that. That's how it works.
Well, and it just
frustrates me. They put too much weight in it.
Yeah, well, it doesn't help that, you know, studios and online, especially home entertainment, you know, they put like the certified fresh stickers on the DVD or on the Blu-ray box sets. Like,
well, because they know how, it's because they know how the audience reacts to it, so they're using it to their advantage. But in cases like this, they use it as a scapegoat.
Yeah, and it's not Rotten Tomatoes' fault. I mean,
it's a great site. It's just the users don't know how to use it.
Well, sure, but it's also, I mean, I'll say this, like people do use it as a decision factor because they want to like know from the critics and you're right. Most people will probably just look at the number and say yay or nay, but there are people like myself and you where we go through the reviews and like read a good bit of them to make our decisions. And look, if most of the critics that I trust don't like a movie, I'm probably not gonna like the movie either. So why would I go? Other than this podcast, why would I go? Why would I go to a movie and review it if I didn't think, you know, it was gonna be good, you know, from, you know, a, if the critics are not liking it, if the people I trust are not liking it.
Yeah, it's really annoying. Honestly, I really wish that people would understand how it actually, like what the proper way to use Rotten Tomatoes would be, is it, the percentage could be extremely deceiving. Is it always? No. But it could, the example I gave is obviously an extreme one, because if it's a positive review, that means I could go from anywhere from 60 to 100%. You don't know how much a person actually likes it unless you go in and read the review.
Yeah.
And it's just it. And then, yeah, on the flip side, you know, you could have 100 reviews and have it be 1%, but, you know,
99 of those are 59% or in the 50s, near 60. And then one that just hops over, that's 1%. But in actuality, both scenarios that I've discussed during this podcast, there's only 1% difference. Like, it's, you have to go in and read the reviews and then go based off of other, or the people that are reviewing it that share this, like, your kind of views on film, so that you can even make it comparable.
Right. So now the Hollywood Insiders this week, and it was covered very well in the playlist article. I'll put a link in the description below. But some of the sources are saying, like, you know, they'll wait like a day or two before the movie comes out to do critic screenings or not even have them at all for, you know, a lot of their movies in fear of that it will get, you know, bad buzz, which is, I don't think that looks good on the movie either. Like, it will, like, it's just frustrating. Like, it won't look good either way, you know, even if you, you know, delay the critic screenings or you don't have them at all or had them like 2 weeks ago. I don't think there's a good way to avoid. If you have a bad movie, you have a bad movie. What you should have done is should have tried harder to make a good movie.
Sometimes things just don't work out though. But with
and I
that,
understand that.
Yeah. Sometimes though, like, with like in the film, Twitter film and stuff like that, you like a lot of people are talking about like that. It makes it seem like they're complaining, like, oh, we haven't had a critic screening yet, blah, 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 stuff. It's like, and then people that never get critic screens, like, well, you don't need to see every movie early. I'm like, okay, well, it's my job to review movies. And I want to do that because I love movies. That's why I do it. I want to review it so that, because there are people that rely on my reviews on if they're going to see it or not. So, but like people, and so then that, it makes sense that, Twilm or Fitter, Fitter. Wow, I just said Twilm and Fitter. Twitter film. It makes sense that they would see that as a bad sign that they don't want the reviews because it's just gonna be bad for the opening weekend, which is what 90% of studios look at when a movie comes out anyway.
Yeah, it sounds like a really less like physical game of chicken where the critics in the studios are like they're just like going head to head where the critic screenings are where the studios are like, well, we won't have them and our movies will do just fine. And then the critics are like, well, people still value our opinion, so you might as well hand it to us. You might as well let us see the movie for what it is. And so it just sounds like, you know, like a weird non like confrontational game of chicken to see like who will flinch first. And I will tell you right now, most respectful critics, they will not flinch at all. They will not take any of this seriously. They'll still go every week to go see new movies. And I mean, Disney will still do it. I'm willing to bet Disney will still want, you know, people watching Star Wars and the Marvel critics reviewing the Star Wars and the Marvel movies and those Disney live action remakes. And I'm guarantee you after this weekend, Warner Brothers will still do critic screenings for all of their movies based off of the critical success of Wonder Woman thus far. So all of this is completely pointless. All of this, like, you know, we shouldn't do critic screenings anymore because it's affecting our movies. It's completely pointless anymore. It's completely pointless.
It is.
Yeah. So, do we have any more thoughts on Baywatch?
If you're interested in seeing it, go see it because you just might be the audience that it's searching for, and it has a lot of eye candy. But that is literally it. Don't go in expecting more.
If you liked the show because you wanted to watch hot people, then this is sort of for you, I guess. However, don't expect to see, because it's R-rated, a whole lot of cleavage. And just expect, you know, a very D-rated plot and D-rated direction. So, yeah, so that's it. Just expect the bare, don't even expect the bare minimum. Just expect to, you know, see a 2-hour movie of very good looking people.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's it for our show this week. Andy, where can the good people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at The Talking Can. Tweet me about whatever you're thinking about movie wise, and then we can go from there.
And you can find me at Movie Kale, and then you can follow this podcast at The Youth Critic. And then you can follow the channel which distributes this podcast at KHZ Network. Next week, we will be back with you for Wonder Woman and Captain Underpants. And then on Monday, I think we're going to release the Star Trek Wrath of Khan episode. So look for that, and we'll be back with you next week. Thanks, everyone.